to live righteously.
It's time for another episode of The Cultural Hall. It's episode number 121. You know what's coming up in the second and third block, Rob?
What?
Sex trafficking.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, this is a heavy second and third episode.
So here's the thing about sex trafficking. It's interesting. You hear stuff about it all the time,
mm-hmm.
and you don't realize that that's like a real thing. Like, it's so underground, I guess. You're just like, it doesn't really affect me. It only happens in like Africa or something.
Right.
But it happens here in the States.
No, it happens a ton. 300,000 people here in the United States, and you'll hear that in the episode.
Wow. Wow.
So we talk all about that. It's a woman who is named Stephanie. She comes from a lineage of sex trafficking. Her great-great-grandma, her great-grandma, her grandma, and her mother all what? Sex trafficked. Listen to the second
and
third block.
They were traffickers? Like pimps?
I guess in a way, you'll have to listen.
Okay.
But they were also sex trafficked as well.
Holy, okay.
It is a heavy second and third block of the Cultural
okay.
Hall. You can follow us on Twitter at The Cultural Hall. You can also find us on Facebook. And something that I've wanted to start doing for a little while now, because we kind of consider this first little block before we get to the second and third block, the opening exercises,
mm-hmm.
if you will, of the show.
Let's do some opening exercises now.
This is where we do announcements and we tell people
head,
about, you know,
shoulders,
hey,
knees, and toes.
This is what's going on. Stupid.
No.
But I'm hoping that I can pull this up real quick. I had have it saved. Nope, it's going to take me a little bit. All right, I'll have it for you next week, but we've got a new part of opening exercises that will be awesome.
Okay, very cool. I wanted to talk about a couple weeks ago, the wife of the party and I, we spoke in church.
Okay.
And we love...
First time as a married couple.
Yes.
And your topic was...
Whatever you want to... They didn't give us a topic.
No topic. Whatever you guys want to talk about.
Which I like.
I hate that.
You hate that?
I hate the whatever you want to talk about.
I love talking about whatever I want to talk about. And it was fun. The thing is, we've been in that ward for a while now, and it's just taken them this long to ask us to speak.
Mm-hmm.
They gave us callings before they asked us to speak in the ward. And she spoke about her three pillars of her faith, kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then I spoke about...
What are the three pillars of her faith? Do you remember?
Oh, boy. Oh.
Oh, you never pay attention to me.
The love from her heavenly father.
That's one. Okay.
I think that's one.
Question mark.
And her father.
Mm-hmm. That's two.
I can't remember the other
Oh,
ones.
Rob. Okay, what was your talk about? Because surely you'll remember what you spoke about.
Oh, boy. Yeah, that's a good point. Because, you know, with these talks, it's an introduction to the ward.
Sure.
You talk about yourself, how you met, those type of things. People always like to know about those things, what your job is.
Can I tell you one thing that disgusts me about your wife?
What?
She calls you Robbie.
Just... At home, but to be funny.
Nope.
She doesn't really do that around people.
She does it around me all the time.
Yeah, because she's comfortable with you.
Okay.
We're not like at a professional like gig or
but
something.
I should take it as a compliment that she feels comfortable
yes.
to call me
there
Rob. To call you Robbie.
I mean, do you call your wife honey? Do you have like pet names for your wife?
Not that I can say here in the
So you have pet names for your wife.
I call her babe, sweetheart.
Yeah. She doesn't have, for me, it's Robbie.
Okay.
But it's
a little disgusting.
And she also does that when she wants to get something.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Robbie, I was wondering.
Really?
She always does that,
she
yes.
has baby voice?
Yes.
Ugh.
But it's funny.
But though. It's cute. You
yes.
like it.
Yeah,
you're
it's
all
fun.
About the disgusting stuff. Anyway, so
but
what
we
did
don't
you
do it
about?
Around people. And so we do all the stuff, the background, talk about who we are, where we're from, those things. And, you know, a lot of people coming up to me afterwards like, wow, can you make a living as a DJ? You know,
uh-huh.
things like that.
Sure. I didn't know you were a DJ.
I know. It's kind of odd. And
like parties or what do you do?
Just brisses.
Okay.
Okay.
Ow.
Yeah, I know.
I wouldn't think there was such a need for that in
know.
The state of Utah, but that's fascinating.
I do too.
What kind of music do you play at a bris?
Ah! Ah! Yeah, that too. Yeah, okay. Yeah, it's good stuff.
Anyway, sorry.
And so we kind of introduce ourselves to everybody. And
did she go first and tell about how you met and then you did your talk? Or did well, my version of the story is a little bit different.
Well, the thing is, yeah, she did all that stuff. I just added a little bit on it. I didn't do my version of the story. And I talked about how there was a raptor at her wedding and those type of things. But I talked about my observations of the ward.
Okay. And what that was what your talk was about?
Yeah, I tried to butter these people about. But I said what I've observed from this ward and what communicates to me. So I talked about my love for the community that this ward gives.
Okay.
And that's what the church is for me, community. Okay. And then I talked about belief and faith, that everybody is welcome in the ward, no matter what your belief is. And I cited Elder Holland's talk.
Okay.
Do you remember that one?
Sure.
Where it says, bring what you have to the church. Don't feel like you're inadequate. Grow on the faith that you do have. Don't focus on the faith that you don't have.
Yeah.
And then I talked about being a good person to another. And so I cited the
So not very useful things is what you're talking about.
No, not really.
Okay.
It was more. And then here's the other thing. I talked about the proclamation for the earth thing. Remember?
The proclamation for the earth. You're recycling.
Yes. And so I talked about that. And some lady comes up to me and she's like, so did somebody just write that? Was that like a blog post? I'm like, no, this came from the church. I guess I didn't really make that clear that came from the church. So
right.
Not a lot of people know about that.
No.
Being good stewards to the earth that we live in.
Right.
And when I said that part, Larissa caught this up. I said, this came directly from the earth, and said, this came directly from the church.
Oh, really?
For some reason, I said that. And she's like, I think a lot of people are confused. I'm like, this proclamation came directly from the earth.
She said, Wabi.
Yes. And
I think you said oaf.
Yeah. And so everybody in their minds are thinking of that talking tree from Pocahontas, you know, giving this proclamation or something. So, but it was good. And then a lot of people came up to us afterwards. And, you know, one lady came up to me and she's all like, where did you find that earth thing? You know, I lean a little bit more left, and so does my family, but they're not members of the church, so I want to show them that we're not completely crazy and, you know, all this stuff. It
You're
was
like,
funny.
Well, I received it from the earth.
Well, I seen it from the earth. This tree that talks to me, grandmother tree.
Yeah. So you're liking your ward, though?
Yeah, it's good. At times we're kind of like, but it's a very diverse ward, which I like.
Because it's transitional because you're townhomes.
Yeah. And there's people, well, there's lots of people in apartments.
Oh, really?
Government subsidized apartments.
Oh, okay.
So it's not really the townhome people, it's the apartments that are...
They give it variety.
That do. But I like that. And...
well, that's because you're open.
And there's ages from all over. So it's a great ward.
That's cool.
Yes.
All right. Well, let's do the second and third block. This was a little bit lighter.
Yes.
Second and third block.
Enjoy.
With Stephanie M. Larson. You don't let me saying that it's a little bit heavy discourage it from you. She is great. She speaks very honestly about what has happened in her family, and it's something that I feel like everyone needs to be aware of and know about. It's Stephanie M. Larson. It's sex trafficking in the second and third block of the Cultural Hall.
We invite you to claim your courage by shedding shameful thoughts, actions, and feelings that disrupt your ability to live authentically or feel connected to others by letting go of fear, blame, and your idea of perfection. The Healing Group, where women go for hope, growth, and healing. We're the home of the Sex Girls. Are you a mother feeling lost in a relationship and feeling stuck? Are you feeling overwhelmed by life? Schedule an appointment now. Can't make it to our office? No problem. Meet with a therapist individually or with a group in our virtual clinic right from the comfort of your own home. Visit thehealinggroup.com for more information.
All right, it's time for the second block of the Cultural Hall, and she's nervous on the phone, and I don't know why. It's probably me. I make her uncomfortable. I made her nervous. But it's Stephanie M. Larson. Thank you for joining me here in the Cultural Hall.
Absolutely.
Now, now you probably hear the name Stephanie Larson and you go, ah, okay, I don't know who that is. And that's fine. The way that she came to the Cultural Hall, mutual friend Terry, shout out to Terry right now. Thank you so much for putting me in touch with Stephanie. But this is what I found, and this has been a long time interview in the making, but I found this. This is from the Mormon Women Project, which you can find at mormonwomen.com, and then you can just search for Stephanie's story. This is what I read and said, you know what? We need to get Stephanie here in the Cultural Hall. Let me read. Stephanie comes from four generations of women who were trafficked for the purpose of sexual exploitation. Her own mother was sent into the trade at age 12 and had her first child when she was 16. But Stephanie's mother broke the pattern by refusing to exploit her own children, allowing Stephanie to grow up outside the sex trafficking industry and joined the church in high school. Stephanie is now a wife and a mother and the founder of two nonprofits, Child Rescue and Backyard Broadcast. She is an activist fighting against human trafficking. Thanks for coming in here, Stephanie M. Larson.
Yes, thank you. Thanks for having me.
So let's talk from the beginning. Where were you born? Where are you from?
I'm from California, Southern California, kind of all over down in Southern California.
And it goes back four generations of sex trafficking. So talk about that background.
Yeah. So it started with my great-great-grandma Lorraine. As a little girl in Kentucky, she ended up being taken advantage of by, as I've done genealogy, I've realized that the man that took advantage of her was actually her cousin's husband. And he raped her, and she got pregnant and had my great-grandma at age 11.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so she was just a little girl. And then from there, he was quite controlling, and he continued to control her and began exploiting her, or trafficking, essentially, renting her out.
I don't necessarily want to get gritty, but, I mean, there are some terminology things that people, you know, we need to define for the sake of this, and then maybe we can just use the term. When you say exploiting, is it things like would take her out, in the streets of Kentucky and say, hey, this is who this girl is, or you know, kind of what do you mean?
So essentially that's renting her out. He was renting her out to adult males for sexual purposes.
Okay.
Sexual acts. And so when people say sex trafficking or sexual exploitation, commercial exploitation, that's what that means. Basically, you're selling the child over and over to adults.
Which can we just stop and have a thought real quick and go, what kind of people do that?
You know, that's actually a really good question. And with our organization, we come across that a lot. And a lot of times the people that do that are people who have had that done to them, sadly. So it's hard to even hate the trafficker, because so often the trafficker, I mean, at one point that trafficker was a little perfect little baby and a child mm-hmm. at some point. So what happens in that child's life that changes things, you know, and makes it so that you can objectify people in that way and hurt other people like that. And so, I don't know, that's kind of the approach we take.
So then let's back up a little bit. So then great grandma, she is forced into exploitation. So let's pick up there again.
Okay. Yeah. So my great great grandma Lorraine, she ends up being exploited, and, she has my great grandma. My great-grandma Anne was someone I was super close to growing up. Because of the nature of what's happened in my family, we're all fairly close in age. A lot of times it's more like sisters than mother-daughters. Mm-hmm. And my great-grandma, she grew up in this home where her mom's being exploited, and she ends up being sexually abused, which is kind of the nature mm-hmm. of a lot of these kids. And then she ends up being exploited as well. And by the time she's 12, she tells her mom, we've got to get out of here. We need to run. You're going to end up dead. It's, you know, along with this, there's a lot of violence. Mm-hmm. And so they do. They run away, and they end up in Kentucky. It's the Great Depression.
Okay.
And sadly, they end up exploited again, and that's really common today. Girls that are originally exploited, even if they get out or they're rescued, quote unquote, a lot of times they either feel unworthy, which in the regular world, so that makes them very vulnerable to someone who wants to re-exploit them, or they're just vulnerable in general to being re-exploited by another pimp or trafficker or someone who would control them.
Does the vulnerability come from, I would assume, I guess, the false idea that they're not worth anything because they're used or they're damaged or anything like that?
Yeah, I think, well, you know, they're constantly being told that their worth is their body. Mm-hmm. A lot of times these girls are being pitted against one another. So a trafficker usually has an entire group of girls that he controls, and he has them compete against one another. And so he'll tell them of their worth. You know, so and so is worth more because she brings home more, and so they start to think that that's their only worth. And they're often told, "No one would want you. Who would want you? Look what you've done." And so these girls really start to feel like this is something that they have done to themselves, that they allowed to happen. I know a lot of the girls, the young girls that we've met, that this has happened to today, they feel like it's their fault because they feel like, well, I should have known better when he came in and treated me like I was a friend or like he cared about me. I should have known right then. Or if she was kidnapped, I should have kicked him harder. I should have fought harder. I should have ran away when I had a chance. So they just take the ownership and the responsibility that they put upon themselves somehow.
I know anyone listening would know this already, but to state it out loud, which it is obviously not their fault, or you know, it's not a consequence of their own choosing to be trafficked or kidnapped or forced into those things. But it's interesting,
absolutely,
you know, that human nature to be like, oh, I could have done something different to avoid this consequence.
Absolutely. I think it's just human nature to play that what-if game. And same thing with any kind of abuse, sexual abuse, verbal abuse, mental abuse, anything like that. It's never your fault that you're being abused, that someone chooses to beat someone else that way.
So let's pick back up chronologically then. So then they end up back in Kentucky, and it ends up reoccurring again. So then what?
Well, yeah, they ended up actually in the red light district in Chicago.
Okay.
And they ended up being re-exploited there. My great-grandma Anne, she ends up getting pregnant and has my grandma Joyce, someone else that I'm really close with. My grandma Joyce just passed a few years ago. Cute little 4-foot-nothing grandma. Anyways, she's darling. So she has my grandma Joyce. So they kids, they're 14 years apart, so they also grow up more like sisters.
Okay.
And the nature of what's happening to my grandma just repeats. It's a generational cycle. Same thing today. A lot of times when this happens to a woman, she gets pregnant at a young age, has a little child, and that will reoccur to that child a lot of the time. And not all the time for sure, but we still see that. And so my grandma ends up also being abused. Sexual abuse leaves a child very vulnerable to being exploited later, so mm-hmm. being basically essentially sexually abused for money. And that ends up happening to her as a teenager.
And this is, again, still in Chicago?
That was in Chicago. I think by the time she was a teenager, they moved to California.
So it's interesting to me because I also think that, like, when I think about moving or, you know, changing a complete kind of life, you know, you have those life choices like moving and especially to a different state. It almost seems like it would be the excellent opportunity for a restart, for a do-over, essentially.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think that they definitely try to do that a lot of the time. One great example to explain this, I have a friend who she lives in Phoenix now, and she's a mom and married and doing great. But she was trafficked as a 19-year-old, mm-hmm. and hers was more of a kidnapping case. And she was trafficked for 18 months across the country. She comes from a really nice home where her dad, her mom is a politician. Her dad was in real estate. Mm-hmm. She was on honor roll and a cheerleader. So she had what you would call, or what you would assume would be, self-esteem.
Sure.
And self-worth, like that she would think good of herself. But by the time she was rescued from her trafficker, one, she didn't even want to leave. By the time the cops bust in, she was worried about a little girl who was 12, who she was afraid would die because of the violence that had happened. She had also been kidnapped. She calls the police and says, this little girl's going to die. And they end up coming, and they try to take her as well, and she won't go. And if you ask her about that, she'll tell you that she just, after a while, you feel like that's the only place you belong. Mm-hmm. Who would want you now? And they really buy into this. Even though she had had 19 years of people who loved her telling her she was of worth, that they would always want her. How could you ever not want your baby? But she didn't feel that way anymore. And when she did end up back at home and things were kind of settling down, and I'm sure she was in counseling, that sort of thing, and she ended up running away from home and leaving again, and ended up back kind of not quite in that life. She ended up putting herself in porn in Las Vegas and became kind of a porn star. And she said she was so unhappy. That's also like exploitation.
Sure.
It's a terrible world to be a part of, but she just felt like, how could I live with these people that were good when I was just trash? And what a terrible way to see yourself. So it's really hard for these women and these girls and boys. This happens to boys. We just don't hear about it as often. There's more of shame, a stigma of shame attached to boys. But it definitely happens to boys.
So then grandma, let's go back chronological a bit, and then we'll talk all about these kind of issues as how they apply today and what people can do and, you know, what we learn. And then obviously the worth and value of every one of God's children. But so California, they get out. They say Chicago's not the thing. They go to California, and this is your grandmother now. And is your mom entered the picture at this point?
My grandma had my mom when she was 18.
Okay.
And my mom, it's just kind of the same thing. They move from person to person. At that point, my grandma she kind of went from one relationship to another, where men were very controlling, very abusive. And my mom started being abused at the age of 3 until she was about 11.
And so these are the people because your grandmother became very vulnerable to those type of people, with your mother then just in the situation, those men would be with your mother as well, is that?
Yeah, okay. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And then there were times when they had no home and there was no man around and they just kind of were floundering on the streets trying to survive. And at that point, when my mom was 12, her mom had been gone for, I think, a week at that point.
Uh-huh.
And
when you say gone, what do you mean?
She would leave with men for long amounts of time and just not come back for a while. And so, because I remember asking my mom that same question, like, what do you mean your mom just left? And she's like, well, that was just kind of common. She would just go, and I would take care of my little brother, and her little brother was 9.
So a 12-year-old taking care of a 9-year-old.
Yeah, and that had been going on since my mom was little. And so she would just panhandle. They lived in and out of motels by the beach, and she'd just go down to Venice Beach, she said, and just say, hey, I lost my lunch money. Could you give me money? Or just kind of panhandle for money.
Mm-hmm.
And then buy food. And then when her mom returned one day, she was just kind of really badly beat up and bruised and bloody. And there was no food in the house, and my mom was like, we need food, and Doug has nothing to eat, and her mom just said, hey, like, you have to help. No one's going to take me right now. You've seen how to do it. You've seen what goes on, and you need to go down to the bar and do that and make money and buy us food and come home with food. And there was a lot more explicit language and involved in that.
Yeah, probably not necessary.
Yeah, not really sweetly said like that.
Yeah.
But and that makes my grandma sound horrible. This is the same grandma that I like that rocked me and taught me how to dance, you know, and like just she was just really cute with me. But she was raised thinking that this is just life.
Mm-hmm.
I asked her about it after I'd had my second baby. So I guess 8 years ago or something, I had asked my grandma about this. And she just said, that was just life. And I wanted it to be better for your mom. But better doesn't necessarily mean without expectation, because that's all they ever know. Better means to be less violent. Mm-hmm. Maybe the people treat you better, or someone who's controlling but not horrible to you, or, you know. It's not our kind of idea of better.
Yeah, but I mean, it is interesting to note that, you know, the conscious thought of, I wanted it to be better for your mom. This story is really difficult to hear, by the way. As I'm listening to this, I'm just like, you know, on the one hand, you hear things like what you said, like this is the sweet grandma who taught you to dance and who, you know, wanted nothing more than for her daughter and for her granddaughter to be happy. And and successful and, you know, live a happy life. And then on the other hand, it's this story of abuse, physical and sexual. And it just, I mean, that's a lot. That's not very descriptive for me to just say that it's a lot, but that's a lot of heavy family history, both from where you've kind of lived and experienced it, but just to even have that, you know, in your ancestry, I guess, just a lot of heavy, heavy things that, you know, I don't know that a lot of people have to deal with. So that's commendable that you kind of process it. And we're talking about it right now. I want to come back in the third block of the Cultural Hall, and I want to talk about how it stops. Because up to this point, it's just kind of this story that, you know, people are listening going, this is really bleak. Is there a happy part of this story? And let's get to the happy part here. We'll take a break for a second, come back in the third block and talk about it.
Okay, great.
Running a small business today can be difficult enough. Imagine all the work you have to do to market it. Imagine the hours you put in to create promotional materials for it. Now, imagine a partner that can help you with all of that and more. Imagine Lennon Design. Lennon Design is your partner in business when you need a professional look at a price you can afford. Whether it's websites, advertising media, promotional materials, and more, Lennon Design can help you promote your business. When you need creative, affordable designs, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
Sidewinder Media was named as one of Utah's top photographers by In This Week magazine and is a winner of several awards for fine art, portrait, and event photography. Sidewinder Media has been professionally photographing everything from wildlife to headshots for over 10 years. Sidewinder Media has the experience and the knowledge to capture your special occasion or portrait the way you want it. They also film and edit music or product videos and do simple ads for Facebook or websites. Email them at sidewindermedia@gmail.com or call Rusty at 801-941-5500. 576 to book your shoot today.
It's the third block of the Cultural Hall. It's Stephanie M. Larson. We haven't even mentioned your blog yet, but you can find her online at give me the blog again. I had it just a second ago. a-mama-drama.blogspot.com. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah. I haven't been very good at keeping that updated though, but there's definitely. That's my blog.
So people can find that there. And we'll talk about a couple other things, those two organizations that you're involved with and their websites here in a minute. Okay, so we're picking back up, history of all of this abuse, both sexual and physical abuse, mental and certainly verbal abuse as well. And it comes to the point where your grandma and your mom are living in California and the family needs to eat, so grandma says to mom, "Hey, you know what? Let's get you into the family trade. Essentially, you've seen how to do it. Now go out and do it." So how does it get to where it was there to where you are now?
Well, you know, if we can back up for just a minute, I just want to add this in that when I talk to my mom about these stories, there's so much good in them as well. That's the story of how the trafficking began and how it continued. But all along there, I think the Lord was blessing my mom and helping her.
How do you think?
For my mom, she'll tell you that some of the greatest blessings in her life when she was young were some friends, other street kids. That, in fact, she has one of them up visiting right now. They're like family to us. I grew up calling a lot of these women auntie because they've known me since I was born. But these are kids that were also just on the streets of Santa Monica and kind of had really troubled lives at home, if they had a home. And they've stayed in touch all these years. You know, 45 years later, they're still really close friends. And so I just think that's a blessing from the Lord. I think he helped them make their own family, and they could feel loved and safe and provided for. They could nurture and minister to one another. So,
I'm glad that you brought that up, because I don't think that's something that, you know, it seems like a long, hard, lonely road, perhaps the way that we painted the picture. So I appreciate you bringing that up. So now let's dive. So mom, grandma says, here, this is what you need to do. Mom heads down and tries to start making money.
Yeah, she was 12 at the time, so she was just a little girl. I remember asking her, because she had to walk from the motel that they were kind of living in at that point, and I just remember asking her, like, what was that walk like? Because the walk was, like, 15 minutes from where they were. Just thinking, what a little girl be knowing where she's headed. And she doesn't really remember. There's a lot of blocked out memories.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. It just pains me to think about it, I guess. By the time my grandma Joyce, leaves again, but she doesn't come back. And so my mom dropped out of school and took care of her brother. And the manager of that motel that they were staying in comes to her and says, I'm sorry, you guys have to leave. And she said he felt really bad about saying that.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember asking her, what? Why didn't he not call child services? Two little kids?
Yeah, living in a motel with no mom.
Oh, my gosh. Like, what is going on? But she said that he was young himself and that she felt bad for him. She was, like, consoling him, like, no, it's okay. We'll be fine. And anyways, that's how she tells that story. But eventually her mom does find her again later, about the time that she was 13 or 14, somewhere in there. And my mom at that point had a job at Pioneer Chicken, and things were kind of just moving along. She dropped out of school and was working full time. And her mom tried to get her to go back and make her money again for her mom.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom said that was the end. She had a really explosive conversation with her mom and let her know in so many words that she'd never do that again in her life. And she wouldn't be part of that, and her kids would not be part of that, and that they were different, and that was not their family. It wasn't part of their family. It wouldn't be part of her family. And that was it. And my mom has just been a great protector of children. Like, she's been incredibly conscious about not just her own children, but other children, about their well-being, if they're being harmed or anything like that. She's very aware of kids in the community.
Mm-hmm.
And has helped a lot of children as I've grown up. And so, she was vigilant that we would not be abused. And we weren't.
So then you come into the picture, she meets a guy and gets married, and then?
Well, things don't always work out quite like that. But
yeah.
She didn't meet a guy.
Nice.
You do need a guy for the baby part, so.
Yeah.
And she did. She ended up, she has me. She had my older brother. She has me. And sadly, she kind of went from one bad choice to another. That's a troublesome thing. Children that are abused, often they, you know, if that's all they know, and that's kind of my mom's, that was her whole growing up life and what she saw modeled. And a lot of the men she chose were also abusive. And so I was never abused and I've never been hit. She was like nuts about that. I think men knew that would be really dangerous for them.
Yeah.
But that didn't stop. Yeah, she was incredible that way. And but that didn't stop them from you know, hurting her. And so... but luckily, when I was about nine, ten, eleven—I can't really remember—but when I was a kid, my mom met a guy that I really liked, and I said, "Mom, can he be my new dad?" And as it turned out, he was, and they ended up married, and he was a really good guy. Never hit my mom or was abusive, and that was kind of her happy ending, I guess.
Yay, happiness in the story. Yay.
Yeah,
yay!
Like, he was a good man, and we joined the church, and he passed away a year ago, actually.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah.
So you kind of swept right past that. It's like she met a nice guy, and then we joined the church, and then, you know. So talk about that. How did the church come into play with that?
I met some LDS kids when I was about 17.
Living in California?
16?
Living in California?
Living in California, yeah. In Lancaster, California, I met some LDS kids. They invited me to a dance. And I thought that was super fun. And I thought they were super, they were quite different than the kids I knew.
How do you mean? And, how do you mean different?
Well, one, they were just really fun. They were kind of ridiculous. You know, they'd be like, oh, let's go on a date. And they'd do crazy things like go wash stop signs or go to the thrift store and dress up in ridiculous clothes. And up to that point, it was like, oh, that's so different than going to a party and just getting wasted. You know, it was fun. It was creative. And so I really enjoyed spending time with them. And then they invited me to their homes. And I can remember one day actually walking in the home of my now sister-in-law. And she's one of the first Mormon kids I'd met. And there's a big picture of Jesus when you walk in over her piano.
You know, like you do.
Yeah, and that seems so cliche in LDS homes, but for me, it's something that's like monumental in my mind. I just remember feeling like, I want this. I'd never wanted to get married. I knew I wanted to have kids, but I didn't ever want a man in my life. I'd been pretty, you know, just, I was scared of men.
Sure.
I'm scared of boys.
And I wonder why.
Yeah, yeah. You can see how that would all happen.
Yeah.
So I never planned on getting married. I was going to go to college and adopt a little girl because my mom made motherhood look really fun, and I knew I wanted to be a mom.
Mm-hmm.
And but being in her home and the warmth that I felt there and the happiness that I saw in her parents' marriage, that was the first time that I thought, wow, what if I could have something like that? Wouldn't that be amazing? And then another friend's house, I remember I'd go there a lot in the evenings and just in time because it was a very safe place and a warm home. And he'd be upstairs doing whatever he's doing, and I'd just sit on the top of his stairs and watch his family down below. His mom would be folding laundry, and there'd be hymns on in the background and kids getting in and out of showers and, I don't know, just doing chores and whatever. And I just remember praying at the top of those stairs, asking that I could have something like that. It was so different than anything I'd ever seen. Even with my dad, who is such a good guy, he also came from such a broken home. We'd never seen anything like this. And before we joined, actually, I remember my mom and I, we were walking down the street in the afternoon, and she had met our neighbors. He was the bishop of the Mormon ward there.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking, and we were saying, do you think this could be real? Do you think they're faking it? They've got to be faking it. Because we've never met anyone like that. And they have their problems. They absolutely do. But there's a hope, even in great struggles. I think there's a hope that comes from the gospel.
Did the whole family join, mom and stepdad and older brother?
Yeah, eventually. Well, so I took the discussions. It took me about 3 months. I was going to a lot of churches because I met these Mormon kids, and I thought, they are so neat because they have such strong convictions. I'm going to do that. I'm going to find a religion. And so I went out looking for a religion, and so I went to lots of churches. By the time I had received an answer that the Book of Mormon was true, then I knew I wanted to join. And so I went and asked my mom, and she said, absolutely not. She said, you are so impressionable, and they're a cult. The only thing she knew about Mormons is, one, they were a cult, and two, if there was a major disaster, go to a Mormon church. They've got a lot of food.
So, they're a cult, but if there's an earthquake, they got the food, so that's where we're heading.
They have food. Which, of course, is not true, right? It's in people's houses. But
right.
Anyways, that's what she thought. So she said I couldn't get baptized. But it was so important to me. So I went back to my mom and petitioned her again and said, well, would you and Dad take the Mormon discussions? And then you can make an educated decision. And then you can decide whether I could join. And you can imagine how well that worked out.
Yeah, that's pretty bold. That's pretty bold, young lady.
And I wasn't even doing that to, like, try to get them to be Mormon. By any means, it worked out so well. And my mom, at one point, she said, you know what? She's like, this is either the Lord's church or it's Satan's church. And because you're wrapped up in it, you've got to know one way or the other. Because she couldn't believe all the people that we hadn't talked to in 20 years, you know, just coming and they all had an opinion about the Mormon church.
Sure, everybody does.
Yeah, she's like, this is either really evil or Satan's just working against it.
Mm-hmm. And so then, boom, became a member of the church. So what I want to ask you in the last couple minutes that I've got you is so you have this history. You've talked to grandma. You hear the stories from your mom. You have all of this, and it's part of you. It's part of your family, right? It doesn't have to be what you are, but it is a part of where you come from. So what do you do so that this isn't a recurring thing with you? And how in your family, you know, have you changed the tide?
Well, so one, I feel really blessed. I feel incredibly blessed, actually, to be born to my mom. And because it does give me a different perspective about what's happening. And especially here in the U.S. In the U.S., this problem looks different than it looks in Cambodia. In Cambodia, you can see these are children that are literally, they're kidnapped and they're in chains. Mm. You know, they're chained to beds. That's very easy to see their victims. In the U.S., it doesn't look like that. Here, domestically, we've got kids that they're not in chains, but they do have invisible chains, I guess you could say. They have traffickers that are threatening family, saying, I know, you know, your little brother's school schedule. Here's pictures I've taken recently of your little brother. And if you don't do what I say, I'll hurt him or I'll kidnap him and do the same thing to him that I'm doing to you. Hmm. Well, that's a pretty strong bond, you know, that keeps her there.
But how common are we talking? Because, like, okay, I hear that and I go, all right, maybe a couple. Couple here in the state of Utah, maybe a little more in California because it's a bigger state. But what are we talking about really, like number-wise, as far as that kind of stuff occurring?
Great question. So according to the U.S. State Department, they say that we're looking at 100,000 kids up to 300,000 kids. And these are only American-born kids. These aren't kids that are trafficked in from other countries. But you can imagine that wherever you have a perpetrator or a John, that's someone who pays for sex.
Mm-hmm.
Wherever you have someone willing to pay for one of these kids, or sometimes they look like adults, so they think it's an adult, you know, put eyelashes on a girl and fake nails and a padded bra, and she looks older. Wherever they're willing to pay for it, the traffickers are going to bring them. It's a money game. It's a numbers game. You know, you sell drugs, you can only sell them once. A child, you sell that child 10 and 12 and 14 times a day. It's a lot of money. It's a big business. Wherever the money is, and the U.S. has a lot of money, that's where they go.
You know, it's interesting. So I just did some quick math in my head. So say that there were 300,000 and there's 50 states. And if you said that everyone had an average, that, and it's obviously not going to be that. And that's obviously not an absolute figure. But just based on that, that's 6,000 kids in each state in the United States. Am
I've
I right?
I've never done that math. That's incredible.
That's a lot. That is infuriatingly disgusting to me.
It is. And, you know, on the flip side, I just want to say that a lot of these men or people that will pay for these kids, a lot of times they don't even know that they're kids. They don't know, like most people in the U.S., they don't know that these people are doing it against their will. Mm-hmm. They think, like, hey, this girl wants to make extra money, or she really likes sex, or whatever it is. They don't realize what's going on. Not to say that it's okay to buy sex.
Sure.
I'm not trying to say that, but I just don't want to make them all seem like vile.
Yeah, like everyone's entering a contract going, oh yeah, well she's only 10 and I'm knowingly doing that. I get what you're saying as far as that goes.
Yeah, and so that's why they can sell, you know, I don't know. There's a lot here in Utah. I was surprised we moved here a little less than 2 years ago from Alberta, and I just wasn't expecting to see this problem the way we've seen it other places. I have been just floored that it's here. But I guess, of course, it's here. It's everywhere, wherever someone is willing to pay for it. So I guess I shouldn't have been surprised.
Does it find itself in a certain socioeconomic class, or is it in all classes?
It's in all classes. It just depends on... So my friend, I was telling you about Natasha... Mm-hmm. When she was trafficked for those 18 months, she was getting, you know, like $5,000 her visit with a guy. These are, so the people who are coming to be with her, they're expecting, I guess, to really keep it on the down low, that sort of thing. So you're getting, like, maybe people that are politicians or higher up in a company, people who need it to know that it's going to be kept quiet, and they can pay you a lot of money to make sure it's kept quiet.
And again, not necessarily knowing that the people that they're engaging with are
children
or trafficked people.
Yeah, or trafficked people. Yeah, a lot of them don't know. I mean, if a girl acts like that, her pimp's going to beat her. If she if she tells, she's in a lot of trouble, and she can end up dead. This is very serious. They watch these pimps. They use fear to control these kids or these adults. Because these kids, the average age of entry into prostitution is age 13. Well, that's a child. And so by the time that child is 21, they've lived all those years in fear. They've seen people die. They've seen people beaten. Very gruesome things. They've seen a lot of that.
So what can people do? Let's go hopeful now. Let's go on the happy side of this. What can people do to help stop this or be aware of it? Or, you know, what's the positive end on this?
Well, one is to talk about it. There's so much shame around sexual abuse in general, whether you've done it for money or you haven't. Like whether, it doesn't matter whether you're being forced and the guy gives you money for it or not. It's sexual abuse, and there's so much shame around it that people feel like, well, no one wants to talk about it. That means I'm dirty and I'm bad. But statistically, sometimes people say it's 25%, and some people say it's 1/3 of girls are sexually abused before they're 18.
Mm-hmm.
That's a huge amount of girls being abused. And I think there's a lot of shame around it. And so definitely talking about it takes shame. I think everyone I've talked to knows someone who's been sexually abused if they haven't themselves. So they've all been touched by this sad evil. The other thing that they can do is they can write to politicians. We need laws that protect the kids. We need laws that have harsher punishments for the Johns and for the traffickers. So that we can. The Queen of Sweden is making huge headway. She's kind of the leading. They have the leading country in fighting this problem.
Mm-hmm.
And what she's done is she's made it so anyone who is exploited or prostituting, quote unquote, I hate to use that word, but anyone, whether they say they're doing it of their free will or not, in that country, they are a victim. And so the woman or the child or the man, they can't be prosecuted. They can't get in trouble with the law. They're considered a victim, so they'll get services instead. And Johns are highly... they have really big punishments there, even to the point that they'll take a picture of a John and put it on a billboard.
Really?
And say, you know, a quote that says, "I bought sex from a 12-year-old.
Oh, my God.
Can you imagine how, I'm sad to say, that would destroy his career and his family, probably.
Sure.
But it would really hinder other men from making the mistake of buying sex.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, and you know, going back just a second, you talk about the shame, and unfortunately, I think, you know, in the church a little bit, we don't do ourselves a lot of favors when we talk about things like, you know, your modesty or your making poor moral choices. Everyone's heard of the example, and hallelujah that the church is going away from it at this point. But the examples of, like, you know, it's the young women's night and they have the gorgeous wedding dress and then someone throws, you know, something on it and then that dress becomes ruined and that's what it's like to, you know, have sex before you're married or, you know, there's kind of that shaming, you know, I mean, hallelujah that people are starting to recognize that's not the way that it should be talked about. But, there, you know, within a church where we talk about the atonement being such a great blessing, unfortunately, I feel like a lot of times we don't talk about how we can make mistakes and be forgiven, or things can happen in our lives and we can be forgiven or forgive ourselves, or, you know, turn that over to the Lord and let Him deal with it instead of continually beating ourselves up about it. And I don't think that we focus on that cleansing, or, you know, taking the sacrament and having our lives be cleansed enough. And we allow ourselves to beat ourselves up so much for things that either happen because of other people's choices or our own choices.
Yeah, I love that. I love just the way you put that. I think that it's so important for us to talk about that one, the atonement's real, but also all of us are going to have heartbreaks and we're all going to have injustices and heartbreaking things that happen to us. And I think in one way that's really sad, but in the other way, trials, they connect us to one another, mm-hmm. and they help us to have compassion for one another and patience, and they help us want to serve one another. And then most of all, they bring us to the feet of the Savior with cracks in our armor. Without cracks in our armor, we wouldn't need him. And I just think in some ways trials are such a blessing. I hope that, like, the trials that I have, I hope can be a blessing to my kids. I hope that one day, if nothing else, that I can just say, me too. I can say, honey, I know what that feels like. You know, I've made that mistake, or I know how that hurts, or, you know, I hope that it can be a blessing to someone else as yeah. I can relate to them and take away shame or sadness.
I only have just another minute, so let me ask you what we ask everyone who steps into the cultural hall. Number one, do you have a calling right now? And if so, what is it?
I don't. We just moved to Kaysville. No calling.
Okay. If you could create a calling for yourself, either one that exists or one that you fictitiously make up, what would it be?
A missionary. I'd go be a missionary.
Full time?
I can't. Yeah. Well, I guess part time because I'm being a mom too, but I love missionary work. I was really happy to get married and really sad that I didn't get a chance to serve a mission first.
Okay.
Wish I could have gone at 19.
And then the final question is, what is your favorite part of your faith?
My favorite part is the plan of salvation, because I think it brings hope and happiness for everyone, that you could have made terrible mistakes, that the Lord will always love you, and that that he'll constantly seek after you and try to help you, and that we get to live with him again and with our family.
I want to ask you, you didn't know anything about the Cultural Hall before we chatted. You feel pretty good about this?
Yeah, I'm excited to listen.
Yeah, you should, and you should tell all your friends about it. Reminder to everybody else, you can find us online. We have a Pinterest page. Just search the Cultural Hall. We're on Facebook, and you can also follow us on Twitter. You can find out more about what we've been talking about with Stephanie. You can go to backyardbroadcast.org, and you can also go to childrescue.org. You can check out her blog, and we'll put links to all these with this episode at theculturalhall.com. Her blog is a-mama-drama.blogspot.com, so you can follow her as she writes once a year on that blog.
You know, can I jump in there for 1 second?
Yeah, please.
If any youth, the Backyard Broadcast is a youth-run campaign, mm-hmm. so support it as adults. We just help them out, but it's really kids out there raising awareness, raising money for police and people that are on the front lines or aftercare who take care of rescued victims. Mm-hmm. And so if any youth out there want to get involved and be part of this movement or lead a chapter at your high school, definitely give us a shout. Check us out online, and we'd love to talk to you more about it.
And that's backyardbroadcast.org. Stephanie, we hope that this has nourished and strengthened your body, and that if you're not healthy enough to listen this week, that you will be healthy enough to listen next week, and that you'll be able to take this episode into your daily life. In the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you on the back row of the Cultural Hall.
Save me a seat. It's sure to be neat on the back row. We really gotta go on the Cultural Hall show.